M, it makes a lot of sense that Diane would be working for the giant, the fireman. 26 years, you'd think you knew a guy. If he's contacting Random Freddy just to get an 80s horror franchise referenced, I bet he'd specifically seek out Diane, just like how he seeked out Dale back in the Great Northern. And it would make a ton of sense that Diane wouldn't talk about it to anyone, especially if she had the typical tall guy instructions like, when the sometimes deaf man turns around, await the bold-faced words on your phone, and speak not of your sister by one until the window screams. This would square away any issues with Diane's reaction to Dale Cooper at the prison being authentic, and in an episode where the fireman enlisted two other people, it's just plain sensible if he were her mysterious ally. Or who knows, maybe it's Audrey's Charlie and a Charlie's Angels reference. Who can say? He only seems to contact people by phone, and he doesn't need to leave the house. Might be something to it. Or maybe I'm just in it too deep. I was trying to write down dog food on my shopping list, and instead I wrote Dougie. Next time you hear me, how much you want to bet I'll be sounding like Wyndham Earle in that videotape, raving about how the blinking in and out Twin Peaks cops in the forest are showing us a time quake in real time, and they're fluctuating from the shockwaves because they're a ground zero when our world and the lodge world scraped across each other, and I'm doing it again. You know, for not having a true protagonist, this show has life. Lynch and Frost wove it, and we get to move along it wherever it'll take us. And sometimes, maybe it'll take us anywhere. Take care, Eagle Scouts.
So you're writing Dougie instead of dog food. That's hilarious, John. You might want to seek treatment for that.
Right?
It is a really good point, though, for a show that doesn't have a protagonist. It still has propulsion. So at least it has one P word besides peaks. That's important.
I like the idea of Charlie being the Charlie from Charlie's Angels. We did see two angels bracketing Laura in the vision that Andy had, and maybe Audrey's one of those angels. Who would be the other?
Well, definitely not her mom.
There's got to be three of them. Yeah, really. Laura, Audrey, and
Diane.
Shelly could be the third one.
There you go.
I do like the whole idea about the fireman, though. We talked about that on the podcast, obviously. And being the liaison to more than a few people now wrapped up in the Twin Peaks world. Even if it's not with Diane, there's still obvious. There's Andy. There's Freddy. So... And it seems like everybody's making this damn reference that I missed. All right, we're not going to spend a bunch of time on that. All right, if you've heard John Bernardi talking, then you know what time it is. It is time for the Sparkwood in 21 Feedback Podcast. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
Tonight, we are reading your feedback on Twin Peaks The Return, Part 14. All right, without further ado, let's get right into it.
All right, first up, we have Tanya. And Tanya says, "You guys, I was walking in London today listening to your latest feedback podcast, amazing episode, by the way, when I found Jack Rabbit's place. Well, apparently, Jack Rabbit is a boat on Regent's Canal. Should I wait here for the Bookhouse Boys? Jokes aside, keep up the amazing work. Best, Tanya." And she sent a picture, and it's this cute little boat that says Jack Rabbit on it.
That's awesome.
And I wish I was there.
Right. Right.
Lovely weather that day, which was, this was sent to us on August 12th. Thank you, Tanya, for writing in, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
And up next, we have Trisha. And Trisha says, "Hey, Sparkles. This is my first time writing in for Sparkwood in 21. I wrote in once for another pod. Was it Vikings? Penny Dreadful? Sorry, I don't remember which it was or what I said. You are my favorite podcasters for TV shows and movies when you do them. More on how awesome you all are at some other time, because holy shit, I just finished watching part 14 and oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. So this morning I got caught up on part 13, listener feedback. So while I was watching this evening, it was almost as if you all were here with me. Or maybe that was wishful thinking, because I wanted fellow fans with me as I shouted, exclaimed, and generally lost my freaking mind. Game of Thrones be damned. What? I'm about to watch the Twin Peaks episode. GOT can wait. There was too much to take in. The Diane Janie E connection, Andy and the fireman, and all of them. Why Andy? Then this green glove Brit bloke. Is he some sort of superhero? And then there's Sarah Palmer. Who or what has she become? Or what evil has taken up residence in this poor woman's body and soul? Okay, like I said, much rambling, but little or no insight. It'll probably take another 2 viewings to put together something coherent. Phew. I think my heart rate is slowing down now. Breathing more normally. So before I rewatch, there's this one thing I've been meaning to share. Going back to the scene in part 12 with Sarah freaking out at the store about the turkey jerky, I totally thought she was having a PTSD flashback. I don't know what it was about the presence of the turkey jerky that triggered her. But when she started saying stuff like, I don't feel good, and specifically how she said it, I thought maybe it was a flashback to post-ingestion of the frog bug thing when she was young, assuming that was her, of course. And later, when Hawk came to her house, well, she had time to drink by then, so she was back to whatever passes for normal for her now. Or, I'm just projecting my own experiences with flashbacks and self-medicating, not frog bug things, haha, because my response was, oh, this is very familiar. I know how this feels. No worries, I'm good now. But if I'd watched this scene 15 years ago, I likely would have had my own meltdown. So did anyone else have this thought? Sorry if it was in listener feedback and I missed it. I've been so busy lately, sometimes I have to multitask and I miss stuff. Anyway, just my 2 cents. Well, off I go to have dinner, a very grounding activity while I rewatch part 14, a totally non-grounding experience. Hooray, I love this show. I adore you three, and I can't wait to hear what you all and the rest of the community have to say about this crazy episode. Hopefully, I'll have time to write in again soon. Be well, no shippers, and for fuck's sake, stay on the bike. Trish.
Excellent feedback.
All of this could have been avoided if somebody had just stayed on the bike, but no, no, no. I've definitely had moments where I don't feel good, and sometimes it's been under the influence, sometimes it's just been life in general, but it's never really been so bad that I've been in, you know, like, I've never been triggered by turkey jerky, I can tell you that much.
No.
So at least I have that going for me. Like, anybody out there who's ever experienced intense anxiety knows that feeling where everything goes from normal to just, like, pretty much upside down in about 10 seconds flat. And then you start to get a little bit dizzy, you start to feel short of breath, and all that stuff. And I thought in that scene, Sarah Palmer, the director, you know, if David Lynch had said, oh, the director, I know it's David Lynch, but the direction, if they had said, hey, this is what you're going to do, pretend like you're having a panic attack. And then she played that perfectly. So,
and I didn't even think about her being sober. And that's another reason why she was kind of triggering and losing it. It's a great point to make.
That happens to really bad alcoholics. Mm-hmm. They get to the point where their normal is, you know, alcohol in the system. And then when it's not, that's when they feel bad. That's when they start to feel shitty. Like you would have the hangover when an intense amount of alcohol is leaving your system. And these types of people have it almost the other way around, to where when there's no alcohol in their system, they're like, ugh, I can't function.
Exactly.
The frog bug thing that she's referring to, I could see how there's more credibility to that theory that was Sarah in 1956, because maybe that frog bug thing has matured into that thing that had the stiletto tongue when she opened up her face. And then when she drinks, she puts that thing to sleep inside her.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a good point.
So maybe she doesn't even get drunk. Maybe it all goes into the frog bug thing and makes it kind of, it suppresses it, like pacifying it. Or feeding it.
All right. Thank you, Trish.
Yeah, thank you, Trish.
Next up is Jenny. Jenny says, at the end of the show in the weekly Strangers in the Roadhouse booth scene, the two women are talking about Billy. The one who is asking the questions seems to turn cold or tense as the other tells the story, especially after she tells her mother's name, Tina. Was that just me that saw that? Just wondering if she has a connection to Audrey. This episode was so amazing. Look forward to your part 14 podcast. You guys are awesome. Thanks.
Oh, I definitely saw it. She seemed very thoughtful.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, we talked about it in the podcast, and it was more than just tense. You know, she was almost, it was almost like she was going, what's your mother's name? Waiting for that response, as if, and then when she got it, you know, something clicked over in her head, and then her demeanor seemed to change after that. Like, she just got suspicious all of a sudden.
Maybe she's a bookhouse girl. Thought about that yet?
Ooh.
Hey, that'd be nice.
It's about time. But like Em was mentioning the other day, we haven't heard the word bookhouse this whole time. So
they're there.
I don't know what that means. Yeah, they have to be there.
Right.
It could be a connection to Audrey. That seems like the most likely thing, because I wondered, I think her name was Sophie or Megan. I can't remember who was who, but I thought maybe she also was hooking up with Billy herself. But when I actually rewatched the episode before we recorded today, and I didn't get the impression that she was into Billy that way. It was more she was, I think she's heard of Tina in relation to something before. And it seemed like when she heard Tina's name, dark thoughts started to happen in her mind or something.
So she could be Audrey's friend, and she could be like just trying to feel this other girl out and being like, so what's your mom's name? And then she says, Tina, and she's like, oh, okay. Because her friend is with Billy, with in quotations, because we don't know what the hell's going on with any of these people.
And they mention Apollo, which I don't really care about Apollo. I'm just like, we've gone all this time without actually meeting this Linda, who's supposed to be so important to the story. Surely she's going to be in the next episode, right?
Yeah, got to be.
Well, the firemen mentioned him, so...
Yeah, back in episode one.
Hoping we forgot.
He's like, did I say Linda? I meant Tina.
Yeah.
The one mistake he makes, you know?
He's just getting all defensive, speaking backwards. I did not say that. I said Tina. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thanks, Jen.
All right, up next is Dominic. Dominic says, hey, Steve, Paul, and M, even though we have 4 hours of Twin Peaks left, the ultra-pessimistic part of my nature is preparing myself for the void that is going to be left when this amazing ride concludes. There are other shows I am watching and enjoying, but nothing buries itself in my brainstem like The Peaks. What an amazing hour of TV Part 14 was. I'm still picking my jaw up off the floor. So much I want to say, but I'll try my best to be concise. Apologies in advance if I end up beating a dead horse with anything you guys wind up covering in your recap. Deputy Andy, the whole damn town, Brennan. Sure, earlier this season we have seen him father a puppet, argue over upholstery, and dictate when and where a potential accessory to vehicular manslaughter would meet him for questioning. But man, oh man, does he know how to jump to action when a faceless, naked damsel in distress needs help following a freakish temporal anomaly. Honestly, I love how Andy was the character chosen to parlay with the firemen and bear witness to his nifty, smoky PowerPoint presentation. It essentially served as his crash course into all the fucked up goings on, and now, yes, Andy Brennan is the most informed cop in Twin Peaks. I love this show. I'm guessing the residuals from Just You are not paying a hell of a lot. James Hurley is a goddamn rent-a-cop. Isn't that just like real life, though? Every too-cool-for-the-room douchebag you knew who peaked in high school ends up living far less glamorously than you'd imagine. Looks like he will end up being the one to discover the source of the Great Northern Chime. His buddy, Freddie, gets 10 points for his Beatles' A Day in the Life reference. We finally get some info on the random green glove. Seems like Freddie is a weapon put in place by the fireman. Makes sense to me, because he is armed with a fistful of green rubber, meant to ground him for punching out woodsmen or other electrically charged lodge beasties. Maybe he will be the one to snap Mr. C's Gregory. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. The grounding and electricity and stuff like
right?
that.
Right. Shame on us.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good call.
Excellent.
Yeah, because it could have been just leather or even wool.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been a mitten, you know? Because that would have been some strange Lynchian stuff, you know, with James or Jimmy over there going, what's with your mitten, buddy? You know, why do you have a mitten? In closing, can I say to the women out there, looking to defend themselves in bars against the advances of all the creeps in this world of truckers, which we live in, please go and enroll yourselves in Sarah Palmer's self-defense class for women. There, you will learn such disarming techniques such as making your attacker stare into the ominous void where your face used to be before ripping their throat out with your teeth. Seriously, guys, I didn't think that mother was referring to that mother, did you? Can you say game changer? What the high holy hell are we in for next? Did I mention I fucking love this show? Dom.
Awesome.
We talked a little bit about that on the cast, about how Paula brought it up, about how, you know, Sarah Palmer being the mother could be the mother. She could have the mother inside.
Yeah, I didn't make that connection until Paul said it, so.
I do really like your point about how every too-cool-for-the-room douchebag you knew who peaked in high school ends up living far less glamorously than you'd imagine. I've been out of high school now for quite a while, and I can tell you that that's true. It's very true. You see a lot of people that you, not a lot because I really don't keep up with the high school crowd that I went to, but I've seen a few here and there, and I mean, there's some people who are in bad shape, so I feel kind of bad laughing, but you just thought that these people were never going to have to touch the ground when you were like in 11th or 12th grade. And I definitely also agree with everything that you're saying about Andy. It's I don't think anybody expected that with that cast of characters that was out there by Jack Rabbit's Palace, having him be the one who gets called up into the vortex to sit there with the firemen and get all of this information bestowed on him. Wouldn't have been my guess. Mm-hmm. It does kind of make sense in the way we talked about that at length during the podcast, and at the end of it, it does kind of make sense, but you're not expecting it when it happens, and it's a really good
Yeah, it was delightful to see him in that room with the fireman.
With that look on his face of what? But it, you know, it's so surprising, but it really felt so right by the end of the scene. You know, it was really well put and done.
And now he is the most informed cop in Twin Peaks.
I do like how when he got back to the police station, he was right back to his old self with putting like, those pajamas are so cute. And, you know, I was a little worried that he was going to be this authoritative, different person. So it was nice to see that he's got all this knowledge, but he's still just Andy, you know?
Yep. Thank you, Dominic.
Thank you, Dom. Up next, we have JT. JT says, hello, no shippers. It's best I can do.
That was good.
What a fantastic episode. I'm so happy Andy got to be the hero and Chad got taken down. Not much to mention this time, but there were a few things. Firstly, what was Andy holding in the fireman's house? It looked like somewhere between an upside down pine cone and a stylized rose held with the stem pointing upwards. Secondly, the word this has been redubbed as that in Philip Jeffries' dialogue, which is a very specific thing to change. Thirdly, in Andy's greatest hits of the Forces of Evil montage, he was shown various elements of episode 8, but not the frog locust, unless it appeared briefly and I missed it. I wonder why that would be. I didn't see it in there, and that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So why would it be omitted?
Maybe because we could go back to thinking that it's not entirely malignant.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't.
It's a helper.
Maybe
it came out of the mother. So
maybe. So I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I could ramble on something on how maybe it's protected and the giant doesn't know about it. But that wouldn't make sense because he knows everything else.
Yeah, that's true.
JT says, finally, as a Brit, I will give Dick Van Dyke a pass on his appalling accent in Mary Poppins. Jake Wardle, who is playing Freddy, however, is English and should know better than that extremely hammy East End voice he was foisting upon us all. It was a rare occasion when I was praying for James to open his mouth so I didn't have to keep listening to all that gore blimey governess stuff. I can't help but see the gardening glove backstory as a demonstration of what wonderful things would happen if Lynch and Frost were writing the Infinity Gauntlet plot in the Marvel films. I was also happy to see that the Las Vegas FBI seem as on the ball as the local police. Thanks for consistently great recaps. Jamie just outside London town, England. P.S. Fuck you, Chad.
JT, this is what we do in Sparkwood in 21. Yeah, the redubbing of and the whole scene with Philip Jeffries and the redub of that bit of dialogue and changing this to that, we delved into that in as much detail as we could in a little refresher course on Fire Walk With Me during the main body of the podcast, but it's going to be very, very interesting to find out the whys of that. We know the hows. We know there was an actor who specifically did the redub, and M figured this out. She actually sent me the link because one day or a couple of days ago, and he was talking about how it's all going to make sense. Just trust the master kind of talk. And so that's what we're doing right now. We're just going to trust that it's all going to make sense at the end, but it definitely has some importance.
Absolutely.
I couldn't tell you why, personally, why the bug was there. Never mind. We already covered that. Sorry. But as far as the accent thing, I was thinking about that. And at first, I thought that the guy playing Freddy might have been an American. And then you're saying that he's British, so then it's kind of like there's no excuse. But I kind of give him a little bit of a pass because, number one, Lynch is probably telling him how to do
exactly
this, to play it over the top. And secondly, I'm American, but there's accents in America that I can't do. I can do a Southern accent because I've lived in the South for so long, you know, and pass it off to people and they would never know the difference. But I couldn't do a New York accent. I couldn't do a Boston accent. I couldn't do a, you know, the California way of talking. There's just like, I couldn't do the whole Minnesota thing. That I would never be able to pass that off. The Midwest kind of the way that they say, certain vowels and things like that. So I would, but see, I don't know. I mean, I lived in England for a time too, but I didn't live close to a major metropolitan area. And I know in London, there's several different accents just in the metropolitan London area.
Yeah.
So you've got your Cockney and then you've got the East End stuff and you've got whatever else. Hopefully that's not the same thing and I'm not sounding like an idiot.
It might be.
Yeah. But so maybe, you know, British people have just as hard of a time trying to pass off other accents as, you know, there's the North versus the South versus the East versus the West. And then
I think you're right. I think they had him ham it up too, though. You know what I mean? I think most likely he told him to really juice it up. You know, it makes sense.
And it was such a fun story to listen to. And I think that the over the top accent just made it that much more fun for American viewers who aren't getting their nerves grated because they're like, I actually know people who talk like this and that's not what it sounds like. God damn it. You know, but if you've ever seen an English or a Australian actor try to do a Southern accent, it's probably how that feels to you. I would imagine.
Exactly. JT, this that's is how it feels to us for sure. And the whole Infinity Gauntlet by Frost and them, that would be amazing. I would love it.
Do you have anything else to say about JT's letter?
No, but East End is Cockney.
Okay, so East End is Cockney. So see, that shows you how much I know about accents in London. Apologies.
Thank you, JT.
Yes, thanks, JT.
All right, up next is Tony. Tony says, hello, Sparkwood and 21. Did you ever notice that street name, Sparkwood, like lighting a match? Got a light? You guys probably did, but it just came to me this morning. Has the area been mentioned in the new season? Yes, it actually has. Andy mentioned it because he was talking about the logging road above Sparkwood in 21.
The farmer that he was supposed to meet.
Yeah, that's where he was going to meet the farmer. Mm-hmm.
Who may or may not be Billy.
Yeah, who could possibly be Billy, but we just don't know. And you know, I think the whole thing about Sparkwood lighting a fire has occurred to me before. You know, over the years, but I don't think the God of Light, I don't think I've made that connection.
No, me either.
I always thought about it in relation to fire, but no, I didn't carry it further with the current season with God of Light, just like you.
Kind of sounds obvious now, though, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Tony goes on to say, part 14 was interesting, to say the least. James is working as security at the Great Northern. Creepy scene where he appears to be following the mysterious hum into the boiler room from A Nightmare on Elm Street. Also, that dude with the glove doesn't help. I know it's not intended as a Freddy Krueger reference, but that whole bit had a crazy vibe.
I don't know.
Yeah, the coincidences are adding up really fast here with that scene. So it might be. I guess it's because you wouldn't expect David Lynch. You associate him with a little bit more highbrow, for lack of a better term, entertainment than you do Wes Craven and Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know. They can coexist equally in my world, so I'm all right with it, but I think it is a reference. So,
and plus Bill Hastings' driver's license said he lived on Elm Street, and you know, Matthew Lillard, who plays Bill Hastings, was in Scream, which was a Wes Craven movie.
Nice.
Maybe David Lynch and Wes Craven were buds.
They drank nice Bordeaux together.
Oops. And he passed away recently too. I mean, in some ways, Twin Peaks is like a full of ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is.
It's its own ghostwood.
This could be a way of him paying a little bit of homage to Wes Craven.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Tony goes on to say, so it appears as though Andy might have grown quite a bit since he waited with Harry outside of the lodge in season one. Looks like he's pretty steady in dealing with the paranormal. He became a real leader. What is it with the FX budget with this show? The Sarah Palmer face removal was really shoddy, and I had to laugh out loud when I saw it. I mean, the bug mouth effect in part 8 was very convincing and creepy, but this was just a bit too much for me. Was there a middle finger aimed at the audience inside Sarah's face? I'm sure that's how some people probably feel if they're not really getting the vibe of this this season, the return. They're like, yeah, that's it. But it was actually the ring finger, the spiritual mound. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a little bit of you could tell that there was CGI going on. It wasn't seamless, and I think like a lot of shows, they have to pick and choose where to put their FX budget. into play. And so I, with with the return, I would say that part eight probably ate up most of what they had available to them.
Right.
I don't know.
I kind of like it because it has that 90s feel to it. So it's almost like they're mixing in some of the old special effects with the new. You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be out of place in the old show to have it open like that, because it kind of reminds me of like V and some of those other shows like that, mm-hmm. the special effects, how they worked out. So it's a little cheesier, but it's mixed in kind of on the right episodes, you know, because they've shown that they've got the budget to do big stuff. But I think it's intentional to give you that older Twin Peaks possible feel.
Like a little bit of a retro kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can go with that.
Yeah, I wasn't too judgmental about it overall. I was Mm-mm. just more kind of like taking in all the information that was coming at me.
Yeah, she has a lot in her face.
A lot of information in her face.
Yeah. Especially the cheesy grin. The Cheshire Cat lives there too.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Up next, we have Adam. Adam says, hey, guys. Thought I'd try sending my thoughts before the recap episode this week. Where to start? It's full speed ahead at face ripping speed, and I'm not complaining. Jack Rabbit's Palace, the giant fireman, Andy and the eyeless naked woman who fell from space. I guess Cooper was lucky he only lost his shoes on his trip. My wife had a good question. Was that Billy in the jail cell with his bloody mouth? My question during this scene was, does this guy have a connection to the lodges, or is he really just drunk? He seems to be communicating with the eyeless lady and also repeated things much like Dougie Coop does. Is the repeating of words an effect of coming out of the lodge? And James in the giant furnace. Sounds like James finally found the location of the mysterious tone that Ben and Beverly were trying to find. This totally reminded me of where Bob hung out in the original series. Got me thinking of the extended ending of the International Pilot, so I went back and watched it again. In the scene when Harry and Cooper confront Bob in the furnace space, or as Bob called it, the killer's lair, he talks about wanting to sing with Mike again and senses Mike is there with him. At that moment, the same tone starts up. Not sure what it means, but it can't be good. Holy crap, we need to rewatch that. The tone's in there?
Wow.
Right?
All right. Homework.
Adam says, getting a little sad that someone's, mainly our dream, will be ending in only a few short weeks. Thanks, Adam.
Well, Adam, I think our consensus was that we have a strong hunch that Billy is the guy in the jail cell with the bloody mouth. And whether he has a connection to the lodges or he's just drunk, I don't know. I think he's addled somehow. I don't know if he's... Mm-hmm. M had talked about Sheriff Truman, Harry Truman, being patient zero for all of this creepy, like, medical, you know, plague stuff that's going on in Twin Peaks. The girl with the rash, which that could have been Sparkle as well. The girl in the car who is puking up the bile. Now this guy mm-hmm. who's having what looks like motor oil, you know, burnt up motor oil coming out of his mouth mixed with blood and saliva and maybe some bile as well. So I don't know. He was probably drunk on top of it though, you know, but above all, he was... See, his repetition of things didn't seem to me like Dougie Coop does, because Dougie Coop would do it very quietly, and he would only pick out one or two words from the whole sentence you just said, usually towards the end. This guy was repeating everything, almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, when I was watching the episode again today, and when Megan or Sophie, whichever one, was retelling the story when she last saw Billy, and she said twice that she couldn't recall if her uncle was there. And I was like, well, I guess maybe she doesn't have that memory, just like Hawk and Bobby and Sheriff Truman didn't have their memory after the vortex, and how Tammy and Gordon Cole and Albert also lost some of their memory after being around the vortex. So maybe there was a vortex that opened up and Billy was exposed in some way, and that's why he was bleeding at the mouth. And maybe this guy, if he is or isn't Billy, because actually there wasn't a consensus. I said he's possibly afflicted with the same thing as Billy, but I wasn't saying for sure he was Billy. But maybe now I'm thinking maybe it is Billy. So now there is a consensus. But unless there's a lot of people being exposed to vortexes currently. So I think there was a vortex that opened up somewhere nearby what Tina and her daughter witnessed. She says that she saw him jump over a 6-foot fence. Maybe he was dropped out of the vortex. Over that fence.
That's a really cool theory. And then he's bleeding
from the nose and the mouth. And if this is Billy, and that's why he's repeating things because Dougie also came from another place like that. But Andy, though, isn't repeating things, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, he could have been sucked into the vortex with the woodsman. So if he gets pulled into a vortex with the woodsman, we don't know how that would affect him, especially with what those guys would do to him. Mm-hmm. It would make sense. And it's kind of like the yang to the Englishman that has the glove. You know what I mean? It's like they're putting their pieces into place also. You know, everybody's kind of maneuvering what they want to happen. So the mother could put him there to fuck things up for our guys, you know?
I think you're onto something. Mm-hmm. I agree with what yeah. you're saying right now about that.
No, it works. Yeah, but it works with what I'm saying. It's a genius.
But what I'm saying about the vortexes and the memory loss makes perfect fucking mm-hmm. sense. Because what did we see happen? We had a flashback to Fire Walk With Me. Philip Jeffries disappears, and only now are Gordon Cole and Albert yeah. starting to remember yeah. what happened. I think that's you're really onto something with that.
So because he was pulled, there was like a vortex that they weren't,
they couldn't see it,
that they didn't mm-hmm. have an awareness of.
Right. They yeah. just to and he just disappeared to them, but there was some sort of vortex that pulled him up, because we have to assume that they're not all going to look the same or present yeah. themselves in the same way.
Absolutely.
So, I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's genius.
Whenever you come down from, and that's why the girl at the bar in the Frank booth couldn't remember whether or not her uncle was there, because she says it twice. Who does that? You know, it can't be insignificant if she says mm-hmm. it twice. So it's all about memory loss. And that's why Albert and Cole are only now remembering, you know, in their memories got jogged by what he remembered in his dream. So somebody, yeah, that's great. I like that.
That's really good.
I like it a lot. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
All right, so up next is Rachel. Rachel says, hey, Steve, Em, and Paul. So we finally get Cooper back this week for like 30 seconds in flashback, but I'm good with it. I normally save my feedback until after I've listened to your podcast to avoid redundancy, but I don't have that luxury this week. I'm taking some time off tomorrow for the first time this year and headed out to the woods for some R&R. Hopefully, sans possessed owls and portals to other dimensions. All in all, this episode was fantastic. My boyfriend watched it with me for the first time, and he's never seen any of the original Fire Walk With Me or The Return. He was a real trooper. He asked very few questions, and after, he said it was, quote, very interesting. You gave him part 14 with no context and background? Oh, boy. I was very surprised we learned where the term Blue Rose originated, that Janie E is Diane's half-sister, and that Sarah Palmer is all Black Lodge possessed. Watching her kill that disgusting guy was way too satisfying.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Cole's dream sequence and feel kind of proud I mentioned the Philip Jeffries living within a dream sequence in last week's feedback, even if it was in a very offhand way. The drunk in the cell was probably the most disturbing scene in the whole series, tied only with James's Roadhouse performance last week. Very good point. I loved Freddy's story. Actually, every scene in this episode had me riveted. I think the slow buildup is finally paying off, and hopefully we keep going full steam ahead. I can't wait to see where this all goes, but I don't want it to end. I want to know, but I don't want to know. It's very conflicting. As far as the dreamer goes, I think it's whoever we want it to be. Why me? Freddy asks. And in typical Lynch Frost fashion, we are given the best reasoning of all. Why not? Can't wait to listen to your podcast and feedback podcast when I get back Monday. Till the cow jumps over the moon, Rachel.
Nice feedback.
Tell your boyfriend that he is a trooper for watching any episode of The Return without context and without understanding why these characters are doing what they're doing. And
well,
who
I heard
they are.
That's the way you're supposed to watch it, right? No, I'm kidding.
You start with part 14, then you go to season 2, episode 6. Then you go back to, no, I'm just making this up.
Then you hit 8 and go back to 1.
I think we're all on board with what you're saying, though, Rachel, about how this slow buildup is paying off in a very grand fashion, and we all can't wait to see. But at the same time, we don't want it to happen. It's mm-hmm. just one of those bittersweet things.
Yeah. And I do feel like I'm dreaming, because Twin Peaks is actually airing, right. actually on the television.
No, it's like a really long, like 2 month long dream.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna all turn into Dougie Jones, Twin Peaks. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you. Rachel.
Have fun with your R&R, and hopefully you don't see any owls that are 5 feet tall, and you don't see any portals. And
don't take the ring, Rachel.
Don't take the ring.
And up next, we have JT again, and JT says, while listening to your cast this week, I had a slightly loopy thought. I should say that I'm thinking the mother, or whatever that creature is what's traveling inside Sarah, but just as a very random what if it's Laura, or more specifically, an element of Laura, the only other person who's taken their face off so far. I know Laura's face contained white light, but that was in the red room, and she then screams horribly as she's dragged out. Who pulled her out? In the original series, elements of Laura were desperately good, but other parts were twisted and dark, and if anyone would have a desire to rain down brutal vengeance on a predatory man, and not just that, but a truck driver. Keep in mind, in Fire Walk With Me, Laura is shown being picked up by truck drivers, and it's implied that's a regular thing. What if Laura has been split, as with the doppelgangers? The dark part of Laura's soul returned to the site of her abuse and took up residence in the mother who deliberately or carelessly ignored Leland's activities. The smile in Sarah's face just reminded me of the dark smile Laura sometimes had when she was trying to intimidate people. Meanwhile, the fireman is taking the good in her, the gold, and sending it down. As I say this, it's not my personal belief of what's going on, but I thought it could be an interesting idea. Great show. Love the monkey noises. Thanks. Well, yeah, actually, that's a great idea about, like, because we do have the idea of how Cooper and Mr. C are not supposed to be in the world at the same time, so you have both like this these opposites, dark and light, mm-hmm. together, and so you have this other parallel story that I guess is linked at the same time, especially since Laura and Cooper are linked,
yeah,
because of their dreams and because of her murder and his investigation of her murder, that's leading to an investigation of a larger
mm-hmm.
phenomena that has been going on for a long time since 1945 apparently.
I can get behind that idea pretty easily. Actually, JT, that sounds really appealing to me. Like, this is the evil side of Laura that's just taken up residence, or let's not say the evil side, but the dark side of Laura that's taken up residence inside of her mother. And so here she is taking vengeance on an abusive man who is a truck driver and is fucking with her mom. So mm-hmm. you've got a 3-for-1 right there. Of course she's going to do that and then relish it. And it almost seems like something that Laura would say too. Imagine her saying it to James or to Bobby back in the original series or Fire Walk With Me. She's like, it's a real mystery, huh?
Was it a bunch of truck drivers that kidnapped her in the diary? Were they truck drivers? Oh, geez,
I don't remember.
That was such a weird...
The scene out in the woods?
Weren't they in a house?
Oh, yeah, I think they brought her to it. It's been a while since I've read it, but it's possible that it was truck drivers. I don't remember specifically, so I don't want to say... So that could be another thing to show that it was Laura, is having the hand go by with the finger and having it be black.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, it could be Laura, but it still can also be Bob, just because he's the one that's putting those letters under
in the fingers,
the fingernails. Like, he's got to. I mean, he was also the one that said the very backwards, which implied that finger.
That's true.
As Gordon Cole explained to Tammy.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing with a lot of these theories. They sound that they like hit you, they kind of like smack you in the face right away, but then you start to remember a little bit here and a little bit there, and you're like, oh yeah, what about that? What about that? Which is the demise of pretty much 99.9% of the theories that I come up with. So welcome right. to the club. But it's still fun to talk about it though.
Well, yeah. That's when we put them all up on the shelf and see which ones pan out, you know? But that's one that's definitely different and unique, and it'd be cool to see it pan out in its own way.
Thank you, JT.
Yeah, thanks again, JT.
Yeah, fantastic. And another one for the shelf, so we'll see.
Up next is Nicholas. Nicholas says, hi, I'm Stephen Paul. Most entertaining episode of The Return so far. The mouth behind my face was grinning ear to ear the whole time. Memory and masks were prominent this week. Gordon's Monica Bellucci dream stirs up memories of Philip Jeffries' visit from Fire Walk With Me. Gordon and Albert had forgotten this phenomenally strange and monumentally relevant event from their mutual past, but are, quote, beginning to remember now. Their recall of Blue Rose and Cooper history, as far as viewers can tell, is otherwise accurate. So, questions are begged, one of which is, what is the right question? Number one, why did they forget? A straightforward for Twin Peaks answer would be that they were made to forget by the exertion of a power-wielding will such as Mr. C's. Hmm. After Albert and Tammy's discussion of the will's ability to create living, breathing thought forms, it is easy to believe the will can uncreate another person's thought/memory. However, accepting that leaves me unable to accept that C, or another culprit, would cease tampering there rather than delete enough of Albert and Gordon's hard drives to really put them off the trail. That's a good point. So it's almost like you're Tammy here. You come up with your own question, then you answer it. You know? Makes sense. It's a complete circle.
You know? What are we here for?
Yeah. You could just read this out loud to yourself. You don't need us. Number two, did they forget? Jeffrey says in Firewalk With Me that, quote, we live inside a dream. And Bellucci tells Gordon the same thing. Twin Peaks time theories aside, we know that dreams aren't bound by linear time, that the membrane between dreams/thoughts and reality is presented as thin. Perhaps the Jeffries event only truly happened in the past after Gordon and or the dreamer dreamed it into history and his memory years later. If Gordon is a strong sender like Cooper, then Albert could contract the memory from Gordon, or he begins to remember it because it only just now became part of history. Hmm. Right back to the answer to, is it future or is it past, being that it's all now. If Lynch and Frost are the dreamers, then this fits with present storytelling, retconning past events and characters. For example, Annie, Wyndham Earl, even Albert as once being an arch skeptic regarding Blue Rosie stuff. The episode ends with Sophie baffled by her amnesia regarding her uncle during Billy's Ferris Bueller on Sparkle dash through the house. In between, we get Hawk, Frank, and Bobby's amnesia for events in the woods. And of course, Nato tells everyone she doesn't remember how she ended up in the forest. What? You don't remember that? It was in between her second and third donuts. Anyway, the permeability of the barrier between worlds is made gratifyingly clear to Truck You after Sarah's facelift. This removal of a mask is an inverse reflection of Laura's. Both recall the many masks in Fire Walk With Me, including the Jumping Man's, the Grandson's, who pulled his away to reveal the primal face of a monkey, and the Grandson's reference to Leland/Bob as the man behind the mask. Nato's scarred face could be seen as either an inviolable, guileless true face or the enforced but hopefully voluntary masking of the very important thing Andy spoke of. Nato might be a counterpart to Mr. C's expressionless face and his former trapping/masking of Bob. Getting back to Laura and Sarah's inverse behind mask contents, one contains the white of the eye and the other the dark within.
Okay, right? Lovely.
Nice.
But the horse is the white of the eye and, not or, the dark within. All more fodder for the idea that things in Twin Peaks can only be resolved through integration of ideal and shadow selves, maybe after a haymaker or two is thrown by Freddy's mighty green fist. Non sequiturs. 1. Freddy's description of jumping on a pile of boxes and Billy's jumping a 6-foot fence might connect to the jumping man's movements in Fire Walk With Me. Don't jump, people, because you're going to get sucked into a vortex and it's not going to be good. Not everybody's going to get a glove. Some people are going to have to get bad stuff. 2.
Motor oil mouth.
2. Does Andy's future depositing of Lucy in a doorway, along with the shaking camera and stunned look on Lucy's face, suggest a coming earthquake to go with the other mounting disruptions? That would have to be a hell of an earthquake, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. That didn't cross my mind, but that's cool. Number 3, unmasked Sarah's inner voice whispers, do you really want to fuck with this? Too quiet and late to be a warning to Truck You. Maybe an admonishment to Sarah from her shadow or whatever is inhabiting her. Hoping Sarah and Diane enjoy a drink and cigarette together someday. Nick. Oh, man.
Sarah, as she is right now with the darkness within and Diane, that would be interesting for sure.
Fuck you, Sarah. Fuck you. And then that would be it. It would be over.
She'd bite her face right back. Well, fuck you. Nom, 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 nom.
So your first two questions about why did they forget and did they forget, you put forth really interesting theories, especially about Gordon being a strong sender and the whole idea of the Jeffries event only really happening after Gordon dreamed it into history and his memory years later. So I like that. That's a cool theory. Mm-hmm. I also like the vortex theory that we had come up with earlier. I'm still with that one because that accounts for a lot of the memory losses that people have when they're around these weird things, because we've been given that piece of information for a reason. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it does seem like Mr. C has an extrasensory ability to learn things about you, because I got the idea that he learned about Mr. Strawberry and all that stuff by just looking at the warden. Maybe he did some research prior to going to that prison. I don't know, but. It seems like you would have to have, I don't think research is going to provide, I can't Google the warden and find out he killed a Mr. Strawberry.
If he has the power of electricity, think about it. We're made up of electricity, you know, the internet. So like you said, he has that extra sense to use electricity to maybe go into your mind or do what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and then usually there's records about stuff everywhere. So who knows? I mean, he can use that little tape recorder of his and do whatever he wants to.
It's just way too much power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of scary.
I also like the idea of Gordon's dream becoming history. Mm-hmm. He's making history as he remembers, which is, that's a mind fuck is what that is.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Yes. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Up next, we have Keely, and Keely says, "Hi, I'm Stephen Paul. I wrote 2 weeks ago for the first time, but forgot to write about my history with Twin Peaks. I was in high school when it came out, and my parents didn't allow me to watch much TV in general, and I was specifically not allowed to watch Twin Peaks because it was satanic in their view. Once I moved out of the house for college a couple years later, my roommate had the series taped from the TV, so it was the first show I ever binged and has a special place in my heart for that reason, besides the fact that I love it. As far as my routine before watching an episode, it's just getting the kid to bed so I can watch undisturbed. She's still young for the show, but sometimes I put on the original soundtrack for her going to sleep music. It will be fun to watch it with her when she is a bit older. To follow up on my feedback from last time, wow, I did not expect my free association theory connecting Cooper, Andy, and Lucy, birds, remember my parrot, Sammy Jackpots, to pay off at all. When Andy went to the lodge, I was initially shocked. After thinking about it, my fun with the topic may be similar to the way Lynch plans his stories, so maybe not odd that the theory panned out somewhat. The guy in the jail, maybe Billy, is also repeating things like a bird. I can't wait to see where this goes. Paul, I'm on the island with you. I was never totally convinced that Diane was bad, but was worried. Now I'm sure she is good. Thanks again for the great podcast. Thank you, Keely." You and I have a similar history as far as Twin Peaks, because I wasn't allowed to watch it, too. My parents were strict, not in the religious sense. It's just it came on during my mandatory study hour, so I couldn't watch it then. And plus, my mom thought it was too weird. Not satanic. She thought it was too weird because she was against anything that seemed abnormal.
My parents were pretty permissive, so I was smoking crack in a whorehouse. Whatever. At the time that Twin Peaks...
I was pretending to be Bob.
Yeah, that it was coming out. That's... my two co-hosts had very strict parents, and I had, you know, a little bit of a fast and loose parenting going on. So, you know, they kind of, they don't give me crap for it, but if I mention it, it's kind of a, but.
Steve was out at all hours on school nights, apparently.
We were jealous. That's the thing. We were jealous.
Guys, just need some peanut butter with that jelly.
Oh, for sure. Crunchy. And bringing, you know, bringing people to the island one at a time. I'm okay with that. Y'all just keep on coming. I think Keely, it's fantastic.
Keely, I like the fact that you're the first person, I think, in feedback to actually talked about binging with VHS.
Right.
Not even VHS that was purchased from the store, but on recorded from the television.
Yes.
Probably with commercials and all, because you had to be pretty spot on to make sure that you deleted all of the annoying ass commercials but didn't miss any of the show. I mean, you had to just have your finger on that button the whole time.
Yeah, the pause button with the cord to it.
All right, thank you, Keely.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Keely.
All right, up next, we have Paul and Wei, and they say, "Greetings, Team Sparkwood. What time is it? It's coffee time. We loved everything about part 14. Seeing Chad get got, suck it, Chad. The amazingness of Andy's meet and greet with the firemen, the jaw-dropping Diane/Janie E bombshell. Please give us a scene with the Evans sisters."
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, Janie E. No, fuck you, Diane. Fuck you. You get out of my house.
I think Janie E would hit her. I don't think she'd even give her a fuck you. She seems pretty physical. I think she'd just kind of give her a solid jab. Like, pop, what? I told you say fuck me again. I'll pop you in your mouth.
She's going to grab her by the scruff of her neck and drag her down the hall like she did to Dougie.
Right.
You know, after everything I've seen out of Janie E, I'd put my money on her in a scrap.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But oh, absolutely.
They go on to say the FBI and Twin Peaks Sheriff Department finally connecting, and most especially a scene with the incomparable David Bowie was pure bliss. Even that part with dark Sarah Palmer going all Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse on the jerk in the bar was awesome. We could easily talk about all these things ad nauseum, but we'll spare everyone our ramblings and just focus on tulpas and dreams this week. At this point, Wei and I know more about Tibetan mysticism than we have any right to know. We suspect there will be lots of feedback on tulpas this week, but we wanted to share our thoughts on the subject anyway.
I think you guys are the first.
Right. Yeah, thank you. You guys are the first. Firstly, we believe that tulpas are not the same thing as doppelgangers, and here's why. A ridiculous amount of internet sleuthing led us to Alexandra David Neal, a French Buddhist from the early 1900s. She wrote about the concept of tulpas and even created her own tulpa at one point. On the most basic level, we learn that tulpas are essentially very well-developed imaginary friends, which a creator will spend tremendous amounts of time and effort meditating into being on an astral level. Tulpas are usually created for a purpose, often companionship or as a coping mechanism, and disappear once their utility is done. They are almost always harmless. Some tulpas become sentient, and as a result, can become independent of its creators. If this happens, a tulpa can also become menacing, as David Neal's tulpa did. Some can be seen by multiple people, but are ultimately a thought form from one's subconscious. Some creators, or tulpamancers, will also conjure a wonderland for their tulpa to reside in. Tammy's reference to tulpas is a misdirection of what Doppelkoop is, and is actually a reference to explain Dougie's existence. Dougie is the most obvious candidate for being a tulpa, as we know he was manufactured for a purpose. Once Dougie Coop came onto the Vegas scene, Dougie's purpose was no longer needed and he disappeared. Mm. Was Las Vegas his wonderland that his creator placed him in? Is the identity of his creator Doppelkoop, or is it Cooper or someone else like the fireman? We think some potential tulpas are the giant from the first two seasons, the Chalfonts / Tremonts, and possibly Charlie. Doppelgangers, on the other hand, are corporeal beings and often represent the duality that exists in the universe. The doppelgangers we see in Twin Peaks are quite different, as they all come from the lodges, with the exception of Maddie. These lodge dwellers / denizens are beings unto themselves with their own agenda. Doppelkoop is a textbook example of this, a double featuring all the sinister and demonic qualities in stark contrast to that of Dale Cooper. They are split souls. In general, seeing your doppelganger is never a good thing. We only need to look into history for evidence of this. Queen Elizabeth allegedly saw her own body on her deathbed shortly before her death. Ooh, that's creepy. Percy Shelley, poet and husband of Mary Shelley, saw his own doppelganger, who walked up to him and asked Percy how much longer he meant to be content. Days later, he was lost at sea. Even Abraham Lincoln had a run-in with his own doppelganger prior to his death. In the end, we suspect a showdown with Mr. C and Dale Cooper to happen, and one must cease to exist because at that point, the soul will come together again. All this makes us fear for the safety of Dale Cooper and the real possibility that he may not live through the return. As Gordon Cole would say, I'm worried about Coop. We are like the dreamer who dreams and then lives in the dream. This passage comes from the ancient Hindu text, the Upanishads. Central to the philosophy of these writings are the concepts of the Brahman, ultimate reality, and the Atman, soul self. In researching this particular verse, we found Eternal Stories from the Upanishads by Thomas Egans, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, Kumada Reddy. In it, there is a story of Balakai, the proud teacher who goes to the king to ask him to teach him what Brahman is. Using a sleeping man as an example, the king explains that when one is asleep, all his senses, including his mind, are withdrawn. With his intelligence asleep, he can only reside in his heart, Atman, and it is there that his truest intentions and fullest potential can be found, Brahman. When the dreamer awakens, he takes his dreams into fruition, much like a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're getting some crazy Dune vibes here.
Yes.
Hence, the dreamer who dreams and then lives in the dream, According to this story, when our hearts are pure, we can create the world and the life we wish for, and we can live in it. Dreaming is not necessarily about reality versus subconscious, but rather the melding of the two so that the best of you turns from a thought or idea into action and reality.
The sleeper must awaken.
Yes.
In Cole's dream, when Monica Bellucci asks who the dreamer is, the seemingly obvious answer is that it's Cooper. He will awaken and achieve Brahman, or his full potential, once his mind and heart are one again, and we will get a resolution to his story. But the Upanishads state that we are all dreamers. So in this instance, we think the real dreamer referenced in this scene is also Cole. He is living a dream within a dream because, wait for it, Monica Bellucci is Cole. He is in fact talking to himself, or perhaps his tulpa, in the form of Monica. Tulpa Monica's purpose is to help Cole solve the mystery of Cooper. The two friends with her represent Tammy and Albert, two more tulpas. They are having a coffee at the cafe in Paris, just as Cole, Tammy, and Albert are enjoying coffee time in Buckhorn. As Cole sleeps, his mind and heart are one, allowing him to remember the scene with Jeffries and Cooper in Philadelphia. He is telling himself, via Monica, to remember what Jeffrey said and how that now relates to his conversation with Sheriff Frank. It is like a dream within a dream, and what he does with that information is how he lives in the dream. What is curious is why Monica is crying as she speaks to Cole. Perhaps they sense a danger coming ahead and ultimately what that means for Cooper's fate. A final thought that this Paul and I cannot escape is that Twin Peaks is a tulpa in and of itself. While undoubtedly, without Frost and Lynch, there would be no Twin Peaks. Most importantly, The Return would not exist if it was not for the collective, fans, and podcasters. It has become a form of collective tulpa, or egregore, with each of us feeding into it and bringing it into existence. After all, we are all the dreamers. Your obliged and obedient servants, Wei and Paul. P.S. As a quick aside, here is a link to the story of Balakai, The Proud Teacher, Chapter 9, for anyone interested in the deeper meaning behind the ancient phrase Cole references. There is also an interesting bit at the end of the chapter about fire that we would love to get people's thoughts on. And then they give us a link to the site at the end.
And I will share that in our show notes. Great feedback. And
wow.
Right.
There's a lot that I am going to be researching because of this. I definitely want to know about Alexander David Neal's tulpa that went dark. That's intriguing. And then also about, I've heard about the, I remember my best friend when I was in the second and third grade told me that you see your double right before you die. And I remember that scared the crap out of me.
Right.
I don't know where she learned that. And then reading the second Exorcist book, there's a, it's Amfortas, I believe, in the book. He sees his double.
Yeah, he is, he's on some self-prescribed drugs, if I remember correctly, because he's having a psychological, there's something wrong with him. I don't know if it was like a cancer in his brain or there was some sort of medical condition that he was suffering from, but he was on certain drugs and they made him see himself and it actually talked to him.
Oh, yeah, that was really creepy.
Well, at first, it would just, if I remember, now I'm paraphrasing it and I'm trying to go from memory. I've read the book like three or four times, but I don't remember exactly. But anyway, at first, it would just mirror his movements. So it would be like seeing yourself in front of you in a mirror, but there's no mirror, just doing everything that you do. Then it started to talk to him and it was telling him things that he didn't already know about his life, that his wife had had an affair with another doctor at the hospital and so on and so forth. And it was one of the creepier moments in the book. Which is saying something when you're dealing with a book that's dealing with supernatural stuff. And this is something that could, you know, probably be medically induced. I was going to bring that up if you didn't. And I also wanted to bring up the fact that Gordon Cole would really do that. He would make his own tulpa, Monica Bellucci, because he's going to be spending a lot of time with her.
I mean, I don't blame him there.
Now, there is the part where he says, I had another Monica Bellucci dream. And you hear Albert go, oh boy. So he's had these before. So if this is his tulpa, if she is him talking to him, then this is a pretty common thing, that this communication between the tulpa and the real self going on.
It supports that she's been created for a purpose and that purpose has yet concluded.
Yeah, it's pretty genius.
I like it. I like that theory a lot. Man, that was some pretty in-depth stuff. There with
absolutely
the...
Yeah, thanks for doing all that work, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You make us look good because that's on our podcast.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Thank you, Wei and Paul. Up next, we have Steve. And Steve says, Dear M, Steve, and Paul, first off, thank you for doing what you do. Listening to Sparkwood in 21 kept me going through the dark middle episodes of season 2 as I rewatched the original series, ramping up to the new episodes, and you guys help feed my need for Twin Peaks when the middle of the week rolls around. You guys rock. I have two quick observations after rewatching this week's episode. First, when Diane walks into the room at the beginning, is it my imagination or are Albert and Tammy blinking backwards? Could this signify that we're dealing with a doppel Diane? Second, when we first see Freddy in the episode, he's trying to crack open nuts, but instead he pulverizes them. What if the purpose of his green gloved arm is not to punch Mr. C, but to destroy the Owl Cave ring once and for all? What do you guys think? Thanks again for guiding us through this crazy journey, Opie. That is my favorite theory about the green gloved arm right now. Crushing the Owl Cave ring once and for all.
Right? It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I can dig it. The only thing I'm thinking of, though, is that the fireman gave the glove to him. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess we would then have to assume that the fireman doesn't have access to that particular portion of the lodge or that area that Mike resides in, where the arm is.
Yeah,
he's been
yeah.
there. Else. He has been in there.
So, but I guess maybe he can go there, but then you would have to think, well, then he doesn't have the power to do anything to the ring. Maybe he doesn't, but he would be able to create something that could destroy it in the real world, I guess.
Or keep it where he's at. You know what I mean? Like, take it back to where he resides. And then why would it have to be rubber? Why not just give him the mitten?
Yeah.
You know, I think the rubber's... Well, and it doesn't have to be just that, though. He could have several uses for the pile driver hand. You know, mm-hmm. So pulverize, like, he didn't have to crush it. He could always punch it, too. You know, so it's definitely something to think about. I mean, he could be... important in a lot of different aspects. It is pretty cool if he just like smashed it. It'd be awesome.
And then everything goes back to normal. No more
that's
ring.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, it makes it, you know, if that's the case, if he is meant to destroy the Owl Cave mm-hmm. ring, if it's even capable of being destroyed,
yeah.
Maybe that's what Mike was trying to do when he threw it to Laura. Maybe he assumed she could in some way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a thought just occurred to me while we were kind of brainstorming about this. What if at the end of all of this, it's not the end of a dream? It's not anything that goes, oh, and then, okay, and this is where we were really at. But we have, whether it's the Freddy destroying the Owl Cave ring with the pulverizing glove or some other means, but everything resets at the end. Like, there's some sacrifice on the part of Laura or Cooper or whoever. And we go back to, you know, Laura doesn't die. Laura mm-hmm. is not, everything gets to go. And all of these people in Twin Peaks get to live their normal lives like they wanted to. And
that would be cool.
Norma and Big Ed get married, you know. Shelley doesn't have to ever have to marry Leo Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Laura can have a normal life. Leland's not wrapped up in all of this craziness like he has been. And because you look at the state of Twin Peaks now, and we talk about this the whole time during the return, that everything is just off kilter. Nobody is where you wanted them to be. Nobody is where they want to be. Everybody's life is a huge disappointment. It's like they're all just like Big Ed, waiting for something that doesn't ever seem to be coming. You know, staring out
that'd
the window.
That'd be really cool. Absolutely. Eating, like a reset.
Eating their Garmin Bozia soup. So maybe that's why we're getting it like this, because there's going to be something that clicks it back, and then they can all have that, and the influence of Bob and the lodges and everything is not there anymore. I don't know how desirable that would actually be at the end of it or how satisfying that would be, but it's just something that occurred to me since we're throwing out ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's when the fantasy begins.
Yeah, the fantasy. This is the reality. And the... Mm-hmm.
And I rewatched it and I didn't see any backwards blinking. I tried to look for it.
I didn't see it either on the rewatch because Em had informed me that you had written about that, and I was looking for it intently to try to see, and I couldn't see it. Doesn't mean it's not happening, but I tend to be of the opinion that the backwards anything happens inside of the lodge and only inside of the lodge. That's that's the kind of MO of the what's happening in there. That's the physicality of the place. And it doesn't always affect your vocals unless you are a denizen of the lodge or yeah. to some extent. But who knows? Anyway, thank you for writing.
Thank you, Opie.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, our last letter of the night is from Shayna. Shayna says, Dear Sparkwood Gang, greetings from Toronto, where Leland Avenue runs parallel to Norseman Street. Naturally, I thought of the Twin Peaks. Naturally, I thought of the Twin Peaks pilot and of the No Ship Network. There is a lot to talk about in this episode, so let me tell you about my viewing ritual. I usually make a Horn Brothers sandwich, butter and brie cheese on baguette.
Delicious.
And an iced black Yukon sucker punch recipe from Binging with Babish on YouTube. And she sent us a link to that so everybody can see this drink recipe.
Which that's the judge drank that, remember?
Oh, yeah.
The traveling judge.
Then I log on to Showtime anytime and turn off the lights. That would be really cool for us to get a picture at the corner of Leland Avenue. And, well, I guess they run parallel, so I guess you can't really do it. But if they, you know, didn't run parallel and they intersected Leland Avenue and Norseman Street, so we would have Twin Peaks and Vikings right there. Then anyway.
We could have our own Sleater-Kinney album cover.
Yeah, you could just point up to him. Shayna goes on to say, Sarah Palmer ripping off that guy's throat left me with a queasy mix of horror and glee. It also got me thinking about the nature of good and evil in Twin Peaks. Are good and evil nouns or adjectives? Are being good and doing good the same thing? Can someone just be evil without doing evil? Ducky Coop has been acting as an unconscious agent of grace, bringing happiness and, in Anthony Sinclair's case, what appears to be a genuine moral awakening, mostly unintentionally. Then there's the fireman, who acts to counter the predatory denizens of the Black Lodge, but seems willing to sacrifice human pawns to achieve his goal. Look at Freddie Sykes, with a glove he can't remove, superhuman strength that may have left someone crippled or dead, and no guarantees that his destiny is a happy one for him. Then we have Sarah Palmer, eldritch feminist icon. Yes, she pulled her face off to reveal a nightmare. But on the other hand, now there's one less homophobic, misogynistic jerkwad in the world. Ultimately, what's most important? Motive, method, or result? That's all I've got this week. Can't wait to see what happens next. Laughing Academy. That's a great point. I don't know the answer to that. That's like one of those high philosophical questions that you really need to know what you're talking about to answer. Can a person be evil without doing evil deeds? So you've got Sarah, who could be looked at as being evil, but you know, she tells this guy, go back to your seat, leave me alone. Then he antagonizes her by saying some truly horrible shit to her, and then she kills him. Nobody's sad that this guy's dead.
Well, sometimes Bob is off the clock too, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You would imagine he takes a day off every now and then and just kicks back and it's like, whatever.
They just went into the bar and sat up on a stool. It's closing time as far as Bob's concerned, but this jerk's got to come and mess with him. So
Bob just wants his Bloody Mary and a cigarette, you know? So she's asking, ultimately, what's most important motive, or what's most important motive, method, or results? So do the ends justify the
means,
right?
I don't think so, always. I mean, it depends.
It really does. It's a case-by-case thing. It's completely relative to what's going on. I like the idea that you bring up about the fireman, who although he does act counter to the predatory denizens of the Black Lodge, he is willing to sacrifice human pawns to achieve his goals. And then you bring up Freddie Sykes. Number one, a glove he can't remove. Superhuman strength when he hit that guy who was the Jobsworth. You know, that's more than Jobsworth. You know, from the description in the story. And then that guy could be crippled or dead. And then, like you said, we've got no guarantee that Freddy's destiny is going to be a good
one for him.
He could be fated to die after he serves his utility in the grand scheme of things. The fireman picked him for a reason, you know, and there you go. He even bought him a plane ticket.
Well, I just looked it up, and Gregory, which is slang in Cockney for neck.
Ooh.
Specifically, Gregory Peck is Cockney slang for neck, so... Yeah, Laughing Academy is right to bring that up. Like, this person could have been severely hurt, if not killed.
So this Jobsworth...
Do the ends justify the means?
So this Jobsworth, who didn't want to sell him the glove, and Freddy himself, could be the eggs that need to be cracked to make the proverbial omelet, as they say.
Well, I was just going to say, there are going to be casualties in war, unfortunately. And a weird, crazy war like this, you know, it's going to be... Some people are just going to have to die.
One thing I just thought of, too, while we were discussing this, and Shayna, you made me think of it because of the firemen and stuff like that. So we were discussing in the main body of the podcast how is it possible that the fireman is, or that Diane is working for the fireman. And then we kind of went on about a little, you know, a humorous streak about how he could be texting her possibly and, you know, things like that. How is he contacting her? How did that all work out? And we're saying, well, you know, you're dealing with some sort of otherworldly lodge denizen, even though he might be White Lodge. How exactly does the communication work? Do you get sucked up into a, you know, a vortex every time, or is he able to use some sort of real world technology? The answer has to be yes, because Freddy went to go buy his ticket and it was already purchased for him. So this gives you a definitive answer that Diane can be working for the fireman and he could be sending her text messages. And he's doing it in all caps because he's very large.
Even his letters are giants.
Yep, even his letters are giant. He can't pass that up. It's all caps all the time. And whenever she says she gets pissed and writes, "Fuck you, fireman," he just lifts up his hand like, "You better stop. Just stop
right
now." Shows
him a giant pimp hand.
Yeah, it's turned the other way.
What? Whoa.
With Laughing Academy bringing up the results of Dougie's unconscious grace with Anthony Sinclair, among others, bringing happiness to even the Mitchum brothers. I want to see Duncan Todd at the end of that train next time so we can have a even longer train. And Roger tagging along as well, being the caboose.
Roger and Duncan finally getting a little joy out of life, you know? Be like, hey, we're going to liberate you from the clutches of Mr. C. Come work for Lucky 7 Insurance. Goodness. Come on over.
All right, well, that's it for feedback tonight. Thank you, everyone, for writing in.
Thanks, everyone who wrote in tonight. As usual, really great, insightful, humorous, entertaining, and just all around awesome feedback from everybody. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. You guys rock.
All right, so everybody get ready for part 15 of The Return that is going to be here before you know it. Get ready. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
We mean it like it is.
Like it sounds.
Fuck you, Chad.